WTIC 1080 News.
Life's gonna suck when you grow up, when you grow up, when you grow up. Life's gonna suck when you grow up, it sucks pretty bad right now. You're gonna have to mow the lawn, do the dishes, make your bed. You're gonna have to go to school until you're 17.
Seems like a long time, doesn't it?
Ah! You're gonna have to go to war, shoot a gun, kill a nun. You might have to go to war when you get out of school.
Don't worry, it gets worse.
You're gonna have to deal with stress, deal with stress, deal with stress. Your life's gonna be a mess when you get home from the war.
That would be about enough of that, I guess.
Joining us now, I think we finally did figure out what would be Alex Bean's theme music. I think we just found it.
I think that's it.
But I love that. What miscreant laid down that track?
It's Fleming and somebody. I don't know who they're called. Well, we'll find out.
I'm glad you guys are still on the air. Jeez, I haven't talked to you in like a long time.
Well, you've been in Singapore. That's been part of the problem.
I've been in Singapore, and I realize that you've probably been devoting like every show to tearing down like the governor. It's just been like too rich. So why would you bother phoning anyone in Boston?
We have spent a lot of time tearing down the wonderful legacy built up by our governor. He's such a great guy, too, and we feel bad about it, but...
I know you feel bad about it, but sometimes you just have to go negative.
Yeah. I don't know if you actually... This could almost bleed up into your column space because he has this superannuated commissioner of public safety named Arthur Spada. And it turned out that that he was making all these doctor appointments in his appointment book, but they were for with Dr. Flog. Turns out to be golf spelled backwards.
Oh,
he was actually going and playing golf with his state trooper escort, who was getting paid overtime to guard him and to guard the state while he was visiting Dr. Flog.
That's true.
You can think about your appointment book now and all the things that you could put in spell
that's
doctors.
That's Massachusetts. In yeah, that's like a fire chief in Massachusetts or something.
Yeah.
Dr. Flog.
We've had that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So anyway, that's the news from down south.
I see. Yeah, I have bumped across. I sat next to someone from West Hartford recently, but unfortunately I couldn't remember who it was, so... What can I say?
Did you remember who we were when you were talking to them, when you were sitting, did you mention that you were on our show?
No. I just, it was so...
What, are you ashamed of being on our show?
Exactly.
No, it was far from that. I don't know, it was very, very complicated. That's right, it was this kind of loser at Los Angeles Airport, now that I remember. Let's not go into it. He was flying to Honolulu. It's too much to explain.
All right. So, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I thought I was prepared. I have this release. I'll talk about my stupid piece in tomorrow's paper, which is, I don't know. I mean, doesn't anyone agree with me? I mean, no one important agrees with me that the Olympics are going to turn into this sort of weird anti-American horror show.
Well, I'm not important, but I agree. I think I completely expect something like that to happen.
But, you know, I mean, here's how naive I am, and it's incredible. I've been a so-called journalist for 25 years. So, like, I'm so stupid, I found, like, the 12 major sponsors, McDonald's, Coke, Kodak, and guess what? They think everything's going to be really great and that I should use my column to urge people to tune in and watch the Olympics.
Well, that could be part of tomorrow's column, and he's doing that, you know, and the other part could be sort of, I mean, yeah, I would imagine that, you know, the America will be booed a lot and there'll be demonstrations and, you know. I mean,
well, surely you guys both noticed that, I mean, the Mexicans were chanting Osama, Osama,
yeah,
at an Olympic soccer game.
Yeah.
And there was a rally in Athens the other day where they said September 11th every day. They chanted. I'm sure I'd really like to be vaulting the horse while 50,000 Greeks are chanting September 11th every day.
See, the thing about that is that if they're that ill-bred, they're going to make the Bush administration look good. You know, they're going to make the Bush administration look good for rejecting the idea of international cooperation if they act like total Visigoths.
I guess. I don't know how. I actually read a wire service story when I was in Singapore about how the Olympic Committee had hired 10 psychologists to go to Athens. And I guess with a full bag, a full formulary of sedatives and anti-anxiety drugs, to keep our people doing their level best. I don't know. That's and the only other like really important information I have to impart is that when you're on hold to the Coca-Cola Corporation, you hear that incredibly pretty song. You know, I'd like to teach the world a song.
That, you mean the new one that the woman sings as she's kind of walking down the road in the new commercials, or the old one?
Are they using that tune still?
Well, there's a new one that's kind of like the old one, and it does say something like, I'd like to teach the world a song or something.
Oh, man, it just it took me right back. I really just wanted to throw away the Poland Spring that was on my desk and suck down 23 grams of pure sugar. Hey, is Bruce Stevens still broadcasting up here, or is that like some kind of closely held secret?
I'm not even
No, it's true.
Yes, he is up there. He's there, and he's here. He's everywhere.
Excellent. He's ubiquitous. He's like the Osama bin Laden of talk radio.
That's right. We can't ever quite trap him.
So if you bored your listeners to death with, and I bet you and I, well, actually, I bet I would agree with both. I mean, like, Al Franken's going to screw the pooch. I mean, this is going to be really bad radio, and it's going to last for 18 months, and that's that. Or do you...
Not that long.
Yeah, we were saying exactly the same thing.
Not that long.
I mean, Al Franken's a pretty smart guy, and he could probably figure this out. Why he would want to figure this out? I mean, talk radio really is kind of a grind. And, I mean, you know, when you think about what Al Franken's life is probably like most of the time, why would he want to do this?
I don't... Well, I guess... You know, money is always a powerful incentive.
Yeah, but I mean, Al Franken, he's got a lot of ways that he can make money. And did you read that really weird profile of him in the New York Times Sunday Magazine? They got into, like, situations where he, like, tackled a Dean heckler up in...
Well, I had read that. I'm a huge unfan of his just going in, so it couldn't matter any less, frankly, but,
But
that's
one of your specialties, is sort of puncturing cherished icons of certain...
Yeah, well, I don't have the guts to go after Richard Clark, who I think is probably a grade-A fraud, frankly. But, well, no, I mean, face the fact.
No, why do you say that?
Another liar flogging a book. I mean, come on.
It was disturbing. I was talking about this in the first half hour. It was disturbing last night to turn on The Daily Show and see him there. And, you know, I mean, it really is. At this point, you know, if he's not an American Idol with judging with Simon or something next week, I'm going to be surprised. I'll be grateful. I'll be grateful if he doesn't sit in with Trump on The Apprentice or something.
Is he talking to Jon Stewart, really?
Yeah, he was sitting there on the couch talking to Jon Stewart.
Next stop, he's a guest voice on The Simpsons, man.
See, that I could see him doing. And the thing that it interrupts is this completely humorless, you know, warrior monk thing that he's got going for him.
I don't know. I was in blissful Singapore, you know, for like 8 days. I missed most of Richard Clark.
Why were you in Singapore?
You know, I'm glad you asked. I had read in the Wall Street Journal that Singapore Airlines had inaugurated the world's longest commercial airline flight, 18 hours from L.A. to Singapore, and I hate flying.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured this would be like basically a great story, and so I got the Globe's travel section to send me there. The problem is that Singapore Airlines like makes everything, you know, even flying enjoyable because one of these, you know, batik clad temptresses comes over to your really wide seat and asks if there's anything she can do to make your flight more enjoyable. And what can I say? It was terrible, and it was terrible in the sense that it was absolutely great.
It sounds like Singapore, I was fascinated to read that Singapore has 19 Dairy Queens.
Yes, that was a very important fact. I didn't even mention foot reflexology, which I had done and actually didn't change my life in any way. And Malaysia has sultans. That's another, like, key fact that that I dredged up while I was there.
It's Singapore where they...
So the Globe got their money's worth, in other words.
Oh, yeah, the Globe got their money's worth. I'm doing a whole story on electronic road pricing. I tried to explain that to four or five people. I mean, I can already hear, oh, well, we've got to cut to an ad. But in fact, they have electronic road pricing. Yeah, I don't know what the Globe's going to print. I actually had this fairly good idea. So you guys have seen Lost in Translation, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I had lunch with somebody who, before I left, who explained, that's a real situation. That when Americans go to Asia, the fact is they can't sleep between 12 and like 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing like this whole piece called Sleepless in Singapore, because in fact it is true. You know, for some reason you can't. That's how that cycle works over there. So you can't sleep between 12 and 4. Now, unfortunately, my hotel didn't have a beautiful 23-year-old woman who wanted to take off her clothes and share the bed with me.
I get the feeling, we only have about a minute left, but I get the feeling that you really liked living in a place that had a lot of rules.
I did sort of like Singapore. My wife's boss liked Singapore also. I mean, it's like being, I don't want to use a bad word, so I won't, but I don't really give a fig about free speech, frankly. And, maybe if I ever come back in your show, we can talk about civil liberties, because I don't give a fig about those either. I mean, I don't give a fig about internet privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a fig about who has, like, all the data that pertain to me. I mean, I understand that identity theft is a bad thing,
right,
and I'm against it. But I think Americans are just totally naive about 99.6% of these issues about, who I am, who knows who I am. So I've just given up, and Singapore's fine with me.
What do you give a fig about, out of curiosity?
Oh, I wish someone asked me that the other day, and I couldn't come up with a quick answer. It's like a job interview.
Yeah.
Where do you want to be in 5 years? I have no idea.
Work on that for your next appearance, all right?
Thank you so much.
I'll be back very soon. Alex Beam for the Boston Globe. Read his column tomorrow.
Stay cool, Bruce. Be cool.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
So the only thing you can talk about here is some old has-been so-called Enron story.
You sound depressed. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's bothering you?
Yeah, what's wrong?
You
what's
sound
wrong?
Depressed. You sound a little sad. What's wrong?
Yeah, I am depressed.
Well, what's wrong?
Want me to get the Vermont teddy bear?
Yeah, share with me.
Yeah, well, you really want to know, huh?
I'm going to give you a big radio hug at the end of this, all right?
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I'm out of work. I have no hope. I have no future. You know what?
Mm.
I'm probably going to have to leave the state to find a job.
Well, that's all good reason to get depressed.
Because you liberals...
But look at the beautiful day out there. Look at the sunshine in the clouds, except when it's raining. And then just thank God you're alive, all right? I'm giving you a big radio hug right now.
Sir, how much risk is in your portfolio?
Oh, scads, old boy, scads.
Why?
With my inheritance, I've got so much money, I trip over it. Look at my shin.
Ouch.
Do that on a stack of gold bricks.
Okay. Well, those of us who might be a bit more sensitive to risk can get a personal portfolio review from TD Waterhouse.
I suppose it's free?
Totally free.
How quaint.
If you care how much risk is in your portfolio, TD Waterhouse can help. Make an appointment now for a personal portfolio review. Let an investment consultant help you evaluate your risk and discover why TD Waterhouse is the alternative to higher-priced brokers like Merrill and Schwab.
You'll excuse me, I have to go buy an island.
Which one?
One of the Bahamas, you see.
To make...
You know you've got a big leg, everybody.
All right, what are you nervous about? This thing you talked me into, the makeover
thing.
May 6th, I guess.
May 6th, yeah.
Okay, now you want a picture for this?
I want a picture for the invitation. Picture of you for the invitation. Picture you, picture me, picture of everybody.
All right. So Mr. Ambrosio's back today, making one of his rare appearances.
Yes, he's going to be with us at the 5 o'clock hour.
So he's hosting this, I guess, or emceeing it or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I happened to mention that you had coerced me into doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And he chuckled and just kind of... Well, he looked pretty happy.
I think it's going to be a fun thing. I'm kind of looking forward to this. And I think it'll bring us closer together as a couple.
Right, I think so, yeah.
Alex is like the best guest, isn't he? I mean,
yep,
even if he doesn't
is.
Have a topic, he's like the funniest guest ever. And he was terrific in that little segment there. And then I was trying to get ready for the segment with Alex. I was over in the office where I duck in sometimes. And Bobby, our producer, is there, and Janine, our boss, comes in, and Bobby says, well, you ought to, maybe sometime we ought to go out to lunch, you and me and Mikey C. and James. James is the new producer over on the...
He said this to you?
No, he said this to Janine. And she went, oh, yeah, that would be fun. And then he said, better yet, you could come up to the palace, which is what they now refer to.
How the dump they live in,
infernal place that they live in, and she went.
I remember what you said.
Yeah,
when they invited you over there.
I'd rather vomit blood.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. I'm glad I was consistent. Anyway. But, no, I thought that was nice that he reached out to her anyway. And, there was a time when Janine would have done that. She would have, when she was a young person,
Probably.
Not in management and didn't have a little baby, you know, right. Like that. She would have gone up and
had,
a responsible individual
now.
And, yeah, you know. But it, now,
you'd
I mean...
You'd be hanging around with those people.
No, and plus you can't be bringing, like, funguses home to the baby and stuff, you know, I mean...
That's another good point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. there's
the chances of that would be very high.
There may be antibiotic-resistant things up there at this point. And, you know, she's got a kid, stuff like that. She's got to be careful.
There are two or three restaurants here in the area who have told them, by the way, don't come back here for lunch again.
Yeah.
Because they go out quite often in the area here, yeah. Well, of course, there's not a restaurant within 7 miles of this place, but, you know, they often take the trek up the road.
There's one up the road that only serves onions. And the only thing they serve. Anyway, we have to... Should we talk to Frank? Do we have time? Yeah, we have time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we always... There's always room for Frank.
Frank.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Frank. Well, joining us now is a guy who actually used to host shows on this station. And he's gone on to be, as far as I can tell, the most quoted man in America. Virtually every article I pick up has a quote from Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine.
Gone on to do something profitable.
Yeah, he's not actually do something meaningful with his life instead
right,
of work
exactly,
here.
Instead of radio.
So joining us now is Michael Harrison. Hi.
Hey, thank you. I'm the most quoted man on earth.
You kind of are.
It's so weird. I'm like a big talking head. I don't even need a body anymore. It's just a head.
Well, that's true of all of us who work in radio, but... let's talk a little bit about today. Today's an interesting day in the history of radio. There's an attempt, anyway, being made to launch... sort of left-of-center talk radio network. What do you know about how the day went? I know that Al Franken began his show today. Were you able to hear it through satellite?
Yeah, I had to listen to it because I've had so many people ask me in the media, do I think it will be a success? And trying to be a fair person who knows something about the business, I always said you can't tell if it's going to be a success unless you hear it because the product is what counts more than anything else. And so I listened to it, and it sounded like a radio show. I mean, you know, a thing can only be what it is. It's a radio show talking about liberal politics. I didn't hear any revelation. I didn't hear anything I didn't know. It was what it was.
Of course, one of the other things that you know and Bruce knows and I know is that there's something very, very grinding about this business. I mean, you know, even if you worked for Saturday Night Live or whatever, I mean, you'd have hiatuses, you have summers off. One thing about talk radio is it just never stops. It is a daily product.
You never create a product that stands on its own after it's finished, like a book or even a television special, a movie, or even a TV show. The product is a continuum. It's like a black hole that just sucks your energy forever. And that's why it's very difficult when the press has asked me, so what do you think of the show? I said, well, that's like judging a movie by the first frame. You can only judge a radio show by listening to many shows because it is an ongoing thing. And if you don't love sitting alone in that room without feedback from an audience, without smiling faces, without laughter, without any kind of instantaneous gratification, talking into that microphone minute after minute, day after day, hour after hour, month after month, year after year, you better get out of the business because you're going to be a very unhappy guy at the beginning of that three-hour shift every day.
I also wonder about the title of the show. I mean, at least for the moment he's calling it the O. Franken Factor.
I think that's ridiculous.
It seems too referential, and it seems like it might be a joke that wouldn't be funny a month or two from now.
It won't be funny a month or two, and that's even funny now. I mean, what is he going on the air to save the world from Bill O'Reilly? Is that what liberals are about, to protect themselves from people who have an equal right to speak? I mean, the Republicans and the conservatives on talk radio are only the result of the First Amendment. The whole way this thing has been presented is if somehow they're standing in the way of the First Amendment, that they're blocking passage, that they're dominating all of radio so that they have to be chipped away before the liberal perspective can be heard. But all they're doing is they're giving attention to these guys and not focusing on the real issues that they should be addressing, and that is weaknesses in the Bush administration, weaknesses in the Republican Party, and problems in the structure of corporate America at this point in history. That should be their message, not that Rush Limbaugh's a drug addict or that Bill O'Reilly is a object of ridicule, because the only people that are going to get that joke are the people who are already listening to those people. And even though I'm a big champion of talk radio and a booster of the industry, the reality is only a small percentage of the American public listens to these guys.
We're talking to Michael Harrison, the editor and publisher of Talkers Magazine, which is the leading trade publication of the talk radio business. You know, I'm so sure one of the things you do get quoted about all the time is whatever your answer is to the question, why have conservative talk show hosts predominated, not ruled, not crowded out, but predominated in this industry?
Because they're really good, and they've been doing it a long time. They're really good at it. That's like saying, you know, why were British musicians so dominant on the pop charts during the 60s? Because they made great records. And the fact is, there was a need for good rock and roll after the Bobby Rydell era. Well, there was a need for conservative thinking in the United States in some medium, because, let's face it, most of the media is basically moderate, somewhat liberal, ultra-liberal if you were conservative. So the conservatives out there during the 90s, when you had a Democrat in the White House and democratically controlled Congress and judiciary, felt no one's talking to them. So the conservatives developed a loyal fan base. Also, liberals like to listen to them because liberals think that right-wingers are wackos and are kind of fun to make fun of. So you had both liberals and conservatives listening. You had some brilliant talent, particularly Rush Limbaugh, who is somewhat of a radio genius, not a political genius. I'm not saying he's a political guy I agree with, but from a perspective of the industry, he's a broadcasting genius, one in a million talent, once in a century talent. And he led the way, and it took time to develop, and that's all there is to it. There's no other, you know, magical answer to that. Is there room now for liberals? Always have been room for liberals, and there always have been liberals. They just don't get the same attention. But if you step back and look at radio as a whole and not get caught up in these categories, hey, national public radio ain't chopped liver. That's pretty darn liberal, and it's got millions of listeners, not to mention another thing that you never hear about called urban talk radio, black talk radio for black people, all over the country, very liberal. And then if you want to step back even further, how about all these so-called shock jocks? They're not so conservative. And now, I mean, Howard Stern has gone, liberal. He's got more influence in a sneeze than Al Franken's going to have in 2 years.
You know, it always surprised me that Stern's politics, for a while anyway, to the extent that he had any at all, he would claim that they were basically Republican politics, which never really made any sense to me. And as you say, in an era where there's a sort of political deadlock, a kind of 48-52 kind of political deadlock, to have Stern suddenly offer to deliver 8 million votes in one direction, it's a pretty startling thing.
Especially people that are not zealots, because the zealots are already going to do what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a myth in this country that because it seems 50-50 that somehow the country is divided. I think it's 50-50 because most people are in the middle and don't care and don't think there's a difference between the left or the right. Most people think that Democrats and Republicans are basically the same thing, so it's like a coin toss, and it can go either way, 50-50.
Which makes you wonder why Rush Limbaugh is so successful, since his entire rap is that there is a world of difference between the liberal and the conservative.
Hell yeah, you know, that's if you're a political, you know, junkie, or you're a wonk, or you're, come on, most people are not political junkies. A world of difference. They're all basically the same. It's only when you get into the microscopic differences or the ideals that they claim to do but don't do in practice. Like, they all talk about cutting taxes, but taxes are always being raised. They all talk about cutting inflation, but it's always going up. They say one thing and they do another. Both parties do that. If it were up to me, all talk show hosts would be against all politicians all the time. The idea that people in journalism or in the media have been so quick to identify themselves as partisans, I find that repugnant. But, you know, what can you do? But I think that most people in this country are independent. They vote on the issue, and they go with the party that addresses their interests at the moment. And that's why it's so tight between the two. And the only way to really swing an election is to appeal to the middle, because that's what's going to change things. The leftists and the rightists, they already know what they're going to do. They're not going to change because Al Franken says something to them that they hadn't thought about, nor are liberals going to change based upon something that Limbaugh says. It's the people in the middle that'll change if they hear something that makes sense.
Michael Harrison is the editor and publisher of Talkers Magazine, the leading trade magazine for the talk show industry. Thank you very much, Michael. Welcome back to your old stomping grounds. You've always got a home here.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
All right, bye-bye. Well, I mean, you can't have our show. Or
no, absolutely not. But
it's nice to have a visit, that's what I mean.
We need to mention something that I've been remiss.
Yeah.
Tonight on Sports Talk, Harry Francona.
I meant to mention it to Alex because he would have said something rude about
it. Oh, yeah, you could count on that.
But,
Harry Francona.
He'll be interviewed, I guess, as a hostile witness by
Joe D. Yeah, that's
or maybe Mr. Ambrosio would be the hostile interrogator. I don't know.
Perhaps.
He may be softer and sweeter and gentler.
Yeah.
With Terry Francona than he might have been in Days of Yore.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, that's tonight. What time is that? 6:30 or so. All right.
I would just keep the radio station on from now until
you
hear
it anyway.
The end of the Terry Francona interview.
Exactly.
Is that his name, Terry Francona?
Yes. Not Tito Francona, no. Terry Francona. All right.
Isn't he some big lurchy catcher or something like that at some point in his
career? I believe he was left-handed. I think he was a first baseman or an outfielder.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, neither do I. So, wow. All right, 4:18, it's the Bruce and Colin show.
And we've got Ken in his car with a point about one of our callers. Now, for people who don't know what Ken is about to talk about, we have a caller who calls in from time to time, way too often, and he identifies himself as Locutus. Now we join Ken.
Yes, Colin and Bruce. I just heard a clip a little while ago of Locutus, your friendly caller, and it got me to thinking. The tense of locutus in Latin is perfect tense. It's
right.
In the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me that since if he never called again, you might want to call him Locutus, but you may prefer that. But if he were to call in again, you might want to refer to him in the present tense.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the infinitive for locutus would be something like loquire or something like that.
Well, it's a deponent, so it would be loqui, which the Romans would enjoy using. They like to use infinitives.
Yeah.
Or loquens, meaning the talking one.
Yeah, he who is talking.
Loquens Magnus or something of that nature might be.
See, he got this from some kind of Star Trek thing. Captain Picard was actually kidnapped by the Borg and turned into a Borg. I think his name was Locutus.
Yeah.
I think that's where he got that.
This is not something you'd want to devote an awful lot of time trying to figure out, actually.
It's not rooted in his command of the Vulgate or anything like that,
yeah.
If that's what you're wondering about. But yes.
I didn't realize that the origin of that, but...
You're probably coming at this from the academic end of things, I get the feeling.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Well, I mean, I took 6 years of Latin, so I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you the whole way. Of course, I didn't remember. Just a deponent, man. I mean, I just tell you, this is all just flushed down the drain, unfortunately, at this point. But
yeah.
Anyway, thanks for calling in.
All right, you're welcome.
I mean, actually, you see Locutus, though, even in the Latin of Catholic Mass.
Oh, my God, isn't this see Locutus? I mean, isn't it gone far enough as it is?
I mean, but in the old Latin masses, which differs quite a bit from the Latin of the Romans, but you'd see that word. You'd see qui locutus per prophetus, which is, who has spoken to the prophets.
Right. Gotcha. Matt in Middletown. Hello, Matt.
Hey. I got rhythm. I got music. I got my gift. I got Daisy.
You're as good a dancer as I am.
No, not at all. No. Maybe he is.
Frankin' smankin'. 55 years I've been in this industry. 55 years.
Yes, I've heard that somewhere before.
There was a time we had a thing called the radio entertainment thing. Now with the, the liberal, the conservatives, we didn't care about that. Give me a melody, give me a talkable topic. Jean Colbert, she could come on, what a cutie. I've worked with her.
I've worked
them all. Those were the days. 55 years! And now with the Frankens and the Garofalos. I've got 35 Garofalos, 25 Garofalos, Garofalos on my lawn. And that was a melody.
Oh, God.
Now, let's
go home.
Let's go home. Okay, I want to say a couple of things about all this stuff. Because, I don't think Michael is right about a lot of what he's saying. And then I just had an opportunity to walk up and down the hall a few times discussing this very topic with a broadcasting genius.
Which one?
Mr. Stephen Sellier.
Which topic?
This whole topic of talk radio, liberal versus conservative talk radio, stuff like that.
I got to hear this.
I didn't really listen to what he was saying. But
Do you ever?
But I had a chance to lay out my own thoughts, you know, and then I had a chance to think even more about my own thoughts while he was talking. But
it's sort of like being, you know, with a, you know, like a blackboard or something.
It's like biofeedback or something, basically, you know. There's sort of, you can sort of focus a little bit more while he's talking because there's this kind of a pleasant rise and fall. It's kind of white noise.
You tell you to promote Terry Francona again?
Yeah, Terry Francona. Yeah. I think we should promote him. Let's promote him to vice president.
Okay.
He's going to be on Sports Talk with Mr. Ambrosio, who hates all Red Sox.
So that'll make for an interesting interview.
Yeah. We'll be able to cut the tension with a knife. Well, here's the thing. You know, I was trying to think of why has talk radio been a fundamentally conservative medium for the most part? I mean, it has, right? You know,
yeah, it has. And he was basically wrong about that, yeah. I think.
And I think it's because it started out as a medium that was infused with more than its fair share of anger. Because, in fact, it was listened to by people who were stuck in traffic and by salesmen who, you know, weren't making their quotas and people whose days weren't going all that well, and they were wondering who to blame. Well, you know whose fault it is? It's the people on welfare, and it's the government, and it's, you know, I mean, there's sort of a natural, there's a good fit between that kind of anger, why isn't my day going better, and certain kinds of conservative demagoguery. And there just isn't a really strong liberal counterpart to that. Until, I mean, what Franken is trying to do, and some of these other people, is that, you know whose fault it is that your day isn't going all that well? The conservatives. And it's people like Rush and Bill O'Reilly and all those people. That's whose fault it is. And I don't know whether that'll work or not. But I think another thing that has to be acknowledged here is that, and it's one of the things that's going to make it difficult, I think, for this particular venture to get off the ground, is that people like to go on, as I've bored everybody to tears around this radio station by saying, people like the variety that they get on radio. They like to go on little trips and little journeys and stuff like that. And I mean, if this show is successful at all, it's because if we weren't talking about this right now, I personally would like to be talking about Simon Cowell. And then, you know, maybe you'd like to be talking about, you know, I-95, and, you know, and we might get around to politics at some point. But the whole idea is, how many journeys can we take you on in a given day? And you just never know, and you never know what we're going to do. And so to concoct an entire network based on the idea that we're going to sort of hammer home one particular ideological point again and again, I think, you know, after a while you're going to bore people unless you really diversify a lot. And then the last thing I think is that radio works best when it's local. I mean, obviously people like Rush have had success, and Howard Stern and people like that. But radio is at its best when it's local. And one of the things that we do on a show like this, and Roy and Debbie do in the morning, and, you know, is we make your world a little bit more real for you. You know, you might be able to hear, you know, one of the fascinating people like Dick Blumenthal and Susan Weisowitz, stuff like that, or, you know, or hear about something that was happening in your community. And I think in a community like this one, where people go home to Simsbury and lock the door and don't go out again, it's even more important to have a local medium like this one that can, in a fairly warm and intimate way, make you feel like you participate in the life of this region. And so, I mean, it's why, you know, there's always some hideous piece of syndicated garbage up, you know, against us, like over on DRC or someplace like that. And I never even know what it is because I don't care, because it's, you know, it's going to be Hannity or O'Reilly or Howie Carr or some piece of, and it doesn't make any difference because they're not local. You know, and they don't know anything about Connecticut. And even if we sucked, which I don't think we do, but even if we sucked, we'd still beat them because we're local. So, I mean, I think that's another hurdle, anyway, that this Franken enterprise faces, is that, you know, it's one thing to do 3 hours of Rush. We do 3 hours of Rush every day, but, you know, pretty much everything else, you know, up until we get up to Clark Howard or something, I mean, everything else is local here. And that's what people really appreciate, having that.
There's also the common thread that goes through, I think, all radio, all music radio, talk radio, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. You've got to have that element involved in it, or you're, you know, you can't just sit here and hammer people all day long.
Right.
Even Rush. Rush, years ago, when he first started, I think was a lot funnier than he is now. Mm-hmm. I actually listened to it and quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I
think Rush is still funny on those days when he gets off, gets away from politics and tax policy and stuff like that, and starts talking about wacky stuff. I think Rush is still funny. I mean, there are some days he gets off on something, and I'm sitting there laughing, and I hate his guts. But, I mean, I think he still can be quite funny. You know, speaking of local things and sort of Every year, I go to this YWCA thing, and it's always some big shot person like Maya Angelou or Candice Bergen or something like that. And this year, it's Leslie Stahl. Uh-huh. And it's this huge luncheon. There's like thousands of people there, most of them women. And I go because I sit at the Doobie McDowell table. Now, to be honest with you, I think probably I wouldn't even... I think probably if I were starting from scratch, from square one, I wouldn't even be invited this year, because I think the Doobie McDowell table has become a tougher social ticket than it used to be. And I think I probably would have been cut loose. As a matter of fact, I think that there may have even been an attempt to cut me loose this year. But a number of people ask whether I'm going to be at the table or not, and so...
Do you think the fact that you've aggravated the hell out of these people over the last, say 10 or 11 months might have something to do with it?
Well, here's the question. Speaking of, because I happen to know that sitting at the table this year will be Susan Bicewicz. So, I'm wondering, is this
You mean Susan Bicewicz that's on the show almost as much as you are?
that's
is that the one you're talking about?
And I'm wondering whether she asked to get, because she's a pretty... a fairly assertive person. I wouldn't use the word pushy, okay? But she can be somewhat assertive.
On the air,
and
anyway.
I'm wondering if, in order to further cement her relationship with this show, she asserted herself about getting to the table. And if so, I'd like to know who got bumped out, Because, last year...
Maybe you're getting bumped out.
Well, no, I saw the list.
Oh,
I'm on the list.
You're on the list.
But, Kiki Kennedy was sat next to me last year. And Kiki is not at the table this year. What happened to Kiki?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, what I'm wondering is, did Susan Bicewicz bump Kiki?
Ooh.
That's what I'm wondering. Because let me tell you something. Sitting at this Doobie McDowell table, it's like getting into Studio 54 at its height. And really, I'm hanging by a thread. I think only Popular Demand got me back at the table this year.
Popular Demand?
Well, okay.
Popular. From who?
Okay, then Freakish Curiosity.
That might be more accurate.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder what strange tech he will unveil this year when we're eating with him.
Exactly.
It might be that kind of thing, a little bit more than Popular Demand. Okay, fine, whatever. I'll be going on that and then.
Just when is this?
It's Friday.
Friday, okay.
Yeah, and I'll be coming right in here after that. You know how I always come zipping in there? I often leave before the speech is over.
Right.
Just so I can be
flying in.
Yeah. I'll be zooming in from the awkward.
Using having coerced some individual to appear on the show later on.
Well, I often do that, too.
Yeah. I was going to put a call on, but I don't think we have time now.
Okay, well, we'll have a little break, and then we go to Jerry in his car and Ron from Canton. Ron, who listens to way too much talk radio, wants to opine about talk radio. I love Donna Summer. And I've always loved this song, too.
We should get this song. We should play it to when it gets going, though.
Yeah.
It's not going. I mean,
we'll let it cook up a little bit, Doc. Okay, Doc. I'm feeling it, Doc. It's real
right
for me, Doc.
Here, right about here.
It's right.
Here we go. All right, now it's on. I played these disco hits. I know what I'm talking about.
Did you have a different name when you were a disco guy?
No. I wasn't a disco guy. What do you mean, disco guy?
Were you like Johnny Distemper?
No, I was not Johnny Distemper. That's a great name.
Thank you. Well, Doc, I'm feeling that. That was real for me, Doc. That was working.
Johnny Distemper.
That worked for me, Doc.
Beautiful.
I'm heavily influenced as a broadcaster right now by Randy Jackson.
That's good to know. Yeah.
You seem like you're having fun right now, Doc. If you're having fun up there, that's the whole thing, But that's working for me. Should we talk to our callers, Doc?
Well, yes, I think we should. Here's Jerry in a car. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Well, football great Paul Hornung said in a radio interview that his alma mater, Notre Dame, needs to lower its academic standards to get the black athlete. Well, I think we know at least one really stupid white person who was able to go to Notre Dame anyway. But Paul Hornung has been able to
humming the Notre Dame fight song.
Hornung has agreed that
nothing a fighting Irish player likes better than a...
Hornung has agreed to an alternative sentence, a weekend of duck hunting with Jason Williams.
Yeah.
It's time for
Sports à Trois, the very French sports discussion segment.
I think Mr. Ambrosio, Michel Broustivas, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, Paul Hornig, who, if you've ever heard him, one parade, one rally.
Let's act like we've won some national championships before, which we have. All right, we have time for Mr. Ambrosio. Do you feel...
I'm ready.
All right to do this?
I'm ready, yeah, sure. The sun and the pool in Phoenix have helped Mr. Ambrosio refresh himself.
Pete Rose always said, stay away from there. It makes you tired, you know.
Stayed away from other things that Pete Rose apparently took part in. So.
It says, dear Mr. Ambrosio, on our vacation to Ashford, Connecticut, I noticed some locals picking cattails from the swamps.
A lot picking what?
Cattails.
Cattails.
Cattails?
Cattails?
You know those cattails?
No, cattails. Cattails. You know what cattails
are? Yeah, sure. Yeah.
My husband asked them why, and the reply was, we're going to eat them. Is this on the level? If so, how do you cook them? Can you really
stew
eat
them?
Can you really eat cattails?
You stew them or you grill them. And the best way to grill them is on a charcoal grill. Mm-hmm. On the George Foreman grill, they get done too well. But if you stew cattails...
What part of the cattail are you actually preparing?
Top.
The top.
Top part, yeah, because... God knows where the bottom part has been. But the top part, maybe the top half of the cattail, you chop that baby off. Now, this is after the cat, of course, is deceased.
Mm.
You mix in a little parsley, maybe a little garlic. It's very good with garlic. In fact, with garlic, it's served in some Canadian restaurants as a delicacy. In this country, what it's done more, and it's certainly done more in the South, in Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, and in particularly in the southern parts of Texas, what you do is you grill it. Nice charcoal. Let it go to a nice golden brown, then flip it over and do it on the same side. Red potatoes must be served with cattail. Anything else and you've lost the flavor. Mm. I'll see you in a week.
Thank you.
Instead of just...
So you did have somebody called up and asked a pretty good question. Why is it that you whack into like a... telephone pole or something like that, you're actually financially responsible?
But are you financially responsible?
Well, I think that guy said that you were, and I think that might even be true, but that if you, like, set I-95 on fire and the road collapses and stuff like that.
Well, in that case, anyway, what would happen would be the road would get fixed and they'd go back against his insurance company.
Yeah, I suppose
they'd recoup the money.
But here's Sue from Enfield who purports to maybe know something about this.
Sue, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Bruce and Colin?
Good.
I just wanted to answer the question regarding why the federal government is picking up the cost to repair the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Most people only carry minimum limits for their automobile policy.
Yeah, actually, I come to think of it, I don't think my Subaru Outback, it's not insured for wiping out an actual transportation corridor of the United States.
Exactly, you got it. So, I mean, we needed millions to repair this bridge. There's no way that woman's policy would cover anywhere near the appropriate funding.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, the truck wasn't at fault, so they wouldn't be going after the commercial carrier, who would be required to carry probably a multi-million dollar policy, but regardless, it'd be nowhere near the $11 million we're talking about.
You know, sometimes if you're renting a car, though, would you like to waive the coverage in case you wipe out an entire interstate? You know, this is the time when it might have been a good idea to check that box, you know, pay the extra $2.
There ought to be a discount for that.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for your call, Sue.
All right, take it easy.
When the guy called up originally and was talking about bridge work, I thought maybe we had to bring Dr. Jerry in for some consultation. There are people here in this building that I have casual acquaintances.
You hang out with Joe Hahn?
Yeah.
You're tight with Joe Hahn, really?
Yeah.
And from 100.5, you're tight with Joe Hahn? What are you doing, Hunter? Is it like Brad and Art Spotta? Do you like go driving places and stuff like that?
But I do. I do often go over there.
Bobby says he's friends with Joe Hahn too.
I actually go over there and hang out.
You hang out with Joe Hahn?
And Alan Camp's office.
In Alan Camp's office?
Yeah.
And you can get a life.
I know.
Yeah.
And
I haven't set foot in those studios since Andrea Pasquale left.
I go in the studio over there once in a while.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And I don't mean to.
Of course, that may.
Do you like Joe Hahn better than you like
him? No, of course not.
I'm just trying to straighten this out. Like, I don't want to mess up your relationship with Joe Hahn.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I
can see. Joke about that. I don't even know who's... What record was that you were playing, Bobby? Oh, this is okay. Well, Walking Jones.
I know, that was a funny little thing.
Yeah,
that's cute. Okay,
right.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah. Well, okay. While we're on the subject of music, I do want to just briefly, I know you don't watch this show, but I have to briefly say...
Is this American Idol again?
I think Simon Cowell is getting soft. You know, he's actually getting all kind of squishy and stuff. Like, last night, at one point, talking to George Huff, he said that he he had, on a previous show, said that George Huff sounded like a Motown backup singer. He said, I was wrong, I take it back.
Well, no, that's maybe he's had, some...
But you know, the other thing that he's doing these days is he kind of does this thing. I mean, he's really like some kind of Martin Short character, you know, who's been in the entertainment business too long. Because everyone's like, oh, he'll turn. He'll go, Randy, you know, you and I, we know what it takes to succeed on this show. We know what it means to be an American Idol, what an American Idol is all about. I mean, he's really sounding like, you know, he's sounding like me when I'm doing that. I've been working on American Idol for 17 years. I've never seen a talent like this. You know, I mean, he's really starting to sound like he's kind of been with the show too long, and he kind of has this ingrained idea. Pretty soon he's going to start talking about entertainment as this industry.
Yeah.
That's when you know somebody's been around.
You know, a year ago,
yeah.
2 years ago,
yeah.
I never would have pictured you
watching American Idol.
Watching American Idol if you were dragged in there at gunpoint.
You know what's worse than that? It was like last night, I had sort of a vision of my night, which kind of got derailed a little bit by some family stuff, but it included going to Real Outreach for a little while to see Bonga, who was this Angolan singer.
Right, yes, night. You mentioned that.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I was going to see Bonga. But I was also going to maybe, and then I realized, well, maybe I should try to work out too because I didn't get any exercise. So I tried to work out, and then while I was changing to go see Bonga, I got a little distracted by American Idol, and it took me, and by the time I got to Real Outreach at 9 o'clock, Bonga was gone. No Bonga. 9 o'clock, Bonga's gone. You know, 7:30 to 9,
that's
the whole concert
thing.
For Bonga? That's what they call a show in Angola, an hour and a half? Yes, that's the whole thing. But anyway, I felt bad because I actually had watched some of American Idol, but I didn't see Bonga, which
yeah.
is the kind of trend that you're talking about, the alarming trend.
It is.
I
guess a little bit alarming because you, say 3 years ago,
yeah.
probably watched what?
I didn't know squat about American Idol.
Half an hour television a week?
Maybe a little bit more.
Not much?
I watched West Wing pretty much.
Okay. But that was about it.
Yeah.
And anytime anything about television was brought up,
I didn't know too much about it.
Not only that, you weren't terribly interested.
I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to know more. American Idol is the top-rated show in America right now. So I'm trying to... here's my theory about American Idol right now. They tried to get... No, actually, I thought this is number four. It's right now, in the last set of Nielsen, there was the two episodes of American Idol, the one and two.
They seem to know an awful lot, and perhaps a little bit too much about this kind of stuff, to be honest.
And then third place was Survivor All-Star, whatever that thing is.
Oh, yeah,
that's
a great
that.
Show.
And then The Apprentice was close. So here's the deal. I think in their effort to get another Clay Aiken, they have like all these incredibly untalented white boys whom they're having to pick off one by one now. I mean, the white boys on the show, they can't do anything. And there's this one guy who's like a hobbit. He's like this, his name is John Peter Pippin Mary Frodo. He's like a hobbit. And he can't sing for a squat. I mean, he's awful. He's so bad. You can't believe how bad he is. And he's got to go, and the other white kid has got to go, and they already took the big football white guy who played in the Rose Bowl. He's gone. Because, I mean, what they do is they have three very, very, very talented African-American women singers.
Uh-huh.
And then they've got one very talented African-American man singer. And then they got a couple of white chicks who can kind of sing. But these, and then everybody else is like from Hawaii or something.
We were sitting, Mr. Sherwood and I were sitting in the office today.
Yeah.
And we were comparing notes on what we knew about all of these shows, like The Apprentice and American Idol and Survivor All-Stars and all of those. You know what we came up with? We know nothing about any of these
I'm
shows.
I'm taking care of it for you guys.
Nothing about any of these shows.
Yeah. Well, The Apprentice has turned into destination television for a lot of people. I mean, even people, somebody like Peter Shapiro, who used to be Mr. Party Animal out of their town. He watches The Apprentice.
He's old now.
He's old.
He's got nothing to do, so he doesn't get the zip anymore, so he's got to watch The Apprentice.
But it's also turned out to be this sort of talk about kind of show.
Yeah.
People compare notes and stuff like that. And have little discussions about what's going on.
We're just kidding about that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Peter being old, though, he is old.
He's old, but he's still got some zip.
Well, he's got very little zip, actually. No, you were dead on, actually.
Okay.
Okay, here's my question. When Bush and Cheney, they're going to talk to the 9/11 panel, right?
Yeah,
privately, and they're not going to be under oath.
Right.
But my understanding is they're going to go in together, right?
I don't know. You know how they get Cheney involved in this, right? They told him it was another energy conference.
Right. But my sense is that they're going in together, that they're going to be there to kind of refresh each other's memories. And I'm just wondering, is it going to be like one of these sort of married couples things? Like, no, honey, that's not what happened. You said, let's go to Iraq. I didn't say, honey, come on now. You were the one who said, Iraq must be behind this. So you're remembering, no, that's not how it happened. It's sort of like one of those sort of couple things. They sort of complete each other's sentences.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb anyway, I think.
They're going for couples counseling with the 9/11 Commission.
Exactly.
How do you feel about what Dick Sheedy is saying right now, Mr. President? How does that make you feel?
The thing is, what's to be accomplished by that? If what they're saying, they're not under oath, and what, there's going to be no record kept of it, right?
Well, W may not even know he's not under oath. He may think it's like a Perry Mason episode or something. He might confess to all kinds of things. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the idea is, I think it's more of a gesture than anything else.
I think that this administration was kind of getting beat up on its recalcitrance, its unwillingness to take the interest that this commission had seriously. And I think Cheney was probably driving it, because Cheney is the guy, really, who has basically said, I mean, I think his philosophy is, post-Watergate, the legislative branch got too much power and was lording it over to the executive branch. I'm sure he's the person who is driving Condi Rice's refusal to go in front of the commission. I'm sure, because, I mean, that's one of his big things, is he wants to reassert the power of the executive branch. And so, I mean, I think probably he will go less willingly than almost anybody, even to do something like this. But I think it's a show. I think it's sort of saying, okay, we're not arrogant sultans and satraps. We'll go in there and we'll talk. That's my opinion.
All right. Here's John in Farmington. John?
Hey, you guys could be Mike and the Mad Dog of the Liberal Radio.
Go on, Mikey!
No. You already are Mike and the Mad Dog, and we're not proud of it either.
Well, the thing is that, is there any chance in your minds of somebody picking this up? I know that you guys are on the bulldog of the radio from this area, 10,000 watts or whatever.
50.
Yeah.
Well, so you're wondering whether somebody's going to pick up all this Franken stuff and everything?
Right.
I don't see that happening overnight. I mean, there aren't that many places that it could go, and...
Well, they own these stations that they're on, I think, for the most part.
They wanted to own these stations. I don't think that's worked out quite as well either as they thought. I don't think they own all of these stations.
They don't own all of them, but I think they either own them or they have some kind of licensing management agreement kind of thing.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, and it's not going to happen on this station.
And not Infinity Radio?
Well, no. I mean, Infinity Radio is like the four stations that are here, you know, and where are they going to go?
Yeah.
Were they going to bump Jenny Boom Boom so they could put Al Franken on? I don't think so.
Well, you know, you could be the cutting edge here.
And the other thing is that these four radio stations are programmed by a programming genius,
Al Haney. Absolutely.
The man who discovered Kid Fresh. And he said he doesn't think this idea. He told me personally as we took one of our little promenades around the corners this afternoon, as recently this afternoon, he just doesn't see this as a winning item. He doesn't see it as a winner. And he's really wrong about these things. So my sense is that Al Franken is going to be jerking slopies about 2 years from now.
Well, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
He needs more support. So, send him an email.
All right, bye. Why did these people call us up about getting Al Franken on, anyway? I mean, what are we going to chop? 55 years I've been in broadcasting. This man starts today, and he's like, you know, he's the second coming. Why are they calling us up?
I don't know. I have no idea. Well, who else are they going to call?
We are perhaps the court of last resort for these people. Well, I want to mention that tomorrow, first of all, I think tomorrow, Leslie Stahl is going to be on the Roy and Debbie show. Tonight, Terry Francona is going to be on with Mr. Ambrosi. That's Destination Radio. Let me just say this right now. Destination Radio. Terry Francona, the manager of the Red Sox.
What do we have?
We have Mariel Hemingway tomorrow. I'll have you know. Mariel Hemingway is going to be on our show tomorrow. That's what it is.
Why?
Because she and I have a lot in common. We are both beautiful women whose lives have been changed by yoga. So that's what she's going to be on.
All right, what's the real reason?
That's the real reason.
Oh.
We are both beautiful women whose lives have been changed by yoga.
Okay.
And she has a new book out about yoga and how it changed her life.
That would be the real
one. And she's coming to the area this weekend. She's going to be at West Hartford Yoga, where I personally do my yoga. She's going to be there this weekend on Saturday, I believe. So she'll join us and talk a little bit about all that.
Okay.
So there. So maybe we don't have Leslie Stahl, but we have Mariel Hemingway. Who would you rather talk to anyway? Leslie Stahl, you could see anywhere, really.
I would say Leslie Stahl, but no.
No, wait till you see this. This man,
I actually talked. Leslie Stahl, so have you.
I mean, I have. I've hung with Leslie Stahl.
I know you have.
I've hung with her.
I remember when they were here.
Yeah. But this Marilyn Hemingway thing is going to change people's lives.
Okay.
Yeah. And do we have the whole extra minute here?
There we do.
Oh. There's something that I want to talk to. Like, oh, I know what it was. I don't know that you'd be interested in this. We have to figure out the right way to do this.
No, but, no. What else? What am I going to get sucked into this time?
No, no. It's not that bad.
No,
it's not
okay.
bad. Tomorrow's April.
The end of
April. Yeah. And April is National Poetry Month.
Right.
And it seems to me that we should do something for National Poetry Month. Now, whether it's, you know,
this should be good.
I don't have an idea yet.
It could
be a poem a day, you know, and maybe read by different kinds of people. Like, remember how Humphrey Tonkin, you got all those sonnets being read by, like, Joe Lieberman and people? Yeah, we could do that. We could have different people come in and read a poem. Particularly some of these desperate, craven politicians will do anything to get on the radio.
We're going to get rolling in.
Yeah, and so it could be something like this. Or we could, like, do some continuous readings of certain kinds of poems.
What rhymes with corruption?
Or we could take some of Rowland's declassified documents and testimony and stuff like that and break it up as free verse and read it as poetry, as found poetry.
There you go.
So there are a lot of different ideas. We'll be playing around with them. We'd like to thank our very fine producer, Mr. Bobby Sherwood.